Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin, press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa is here screening your calls. There's still some lines open if you're listening to us online and you want to jump in on the live call. Pick up your phone and dial 347-884-8327. That'll get you in on the call. Once you're on the call, we're going to be taking your questions, comments, topics, whatever you've got. So press 1 on your phone. Lisa will screen that call, and we're going to get to those here in just a couple minutes. So go ahead and start lining those up right now. If you've got a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be, things are wide open tonight. Press 1 on your phone right now, and we'll get to those. Again, that number to join us on the call, 347-884-8327. Here's a rundown of what's going on in the industry this week. The market demand index, this is from the Internet Truck Stop, is down 4%, sitting at 6.91. It was 7.22 the week before. I would really expect that this is going to continue on through the rest of this year. I don't think we're going to see anything all that exciting. In fact, I think we may see a downward trend from here on out. We're right there. We're kind of hanging at the point where we have some negotiation power. But if we were to hang out here too long under the 7 mark, I think we'll see some of that go away. So could be a little rough here towards the end of the year and into January. I don't think you're going to see anything all that exciting happening. As far as rates go right now, overall equipment rates stayed the same this week at $1.81. Van rates were up 1% to $1.62. Reefer rates were up 1% to $1.77. Flatbed rates down 1% to $1.67. And specialized rates were off 1% to $2.18. When we look at the individual load-to-truck ratios, dry van load-to-truck ratio for the week was down 9.7%. Flatbed load-to-truck ratio down 13%. Reefer load-to-truck ratio was down 4%. Again, I wouldn't expect any major changes to happen between now and the end of the year. I would think that we may see a small spike right around Thanksgiving, maybe. Traditionally, we tend to see a little bit, and then probably just see this continue to go down between now and the holidays, and then it probably won't come back up through January. That's just what I'm predicting right now, but you never know what could change. We are going to get to your calls again. If you are listening online and you want to join us, 347-884-8327. If you're on that call, press 1 right now, and we'll get to
questions. The updates on the market, those are brought to you by True Balance Wheel Centering Products.
Do you have irregular tire wear and vibration? Need to get more miles out of your tires and your fuel tank? You need True Balance Wheel Centering Products. These patented products center the wheels back to the wheel stud. The result is increased tire life, increased fuel mileage, and the smoothest ride possible, period. Go to the website, www.truebal.com, and see what True Balance has done for other drivers just like you. If you drive a truck, True Balance is a must. Call us today at 866-686-9285 and get your center on.
If you're not familiar with True Balance wheel centering products, don't get them confused with wheel balancing products. I know their name is True Balance, but they center the wheels. They don't balance. So if you have Centromatics or Balance Masters, or you spin balance, or you use any type of internal balancing products, you still want True Balance on the truck to center up the wheel. What happens is if the wheel and brake drums are mounted off-center, which happens a lot on hub-piloted wheels, the balancer is going to have to work too hard. In fact, many times, the balancer can't make up the difference. And that's where True Balance comes in. By centering the assemblies first, then our balancing products work much better. So again, even if you've already have some sort of balancing product, no matter what it is, True Balance will help them all work better. That number again, 970-686-9285. You can give them a call and order them, or you can give them a call, find out where their dealers are. You can also stop by Truck City Service. They are a dealer of True Balance products as well. Let's get to some phone calls. Hey, I'll tell you what else we can do tonight. We are looking at our game plan for next year as far as what we're going to be doing with this podcast. And we've been doing it all year. It's been going really well, but we want to make sure we're giving you, the listeners, what you want. You know, we tried a couple different things throughout the year. We tried the political show, which I loved. We didn't get enough participation on that show. We've done some of the things like Trends in Technology, where we bring other speakers on and other guests, and we'd like to continue that trend. But what I'd really like to know is what you want to hear. What could we use? We have 3 hours a week that we can do the podcast, and we'll try to keep up with that schedule throughout this coming year. What could we do with that 3 hours that you would really like to see? So jump in tonight and let us know. In fact, press 1 on your phone right now and talk to Lisa. Let us know what you'd like to see us do with this podcast for the coming year. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's start off tonight in Texas. Hector, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going there, Kevin?
Going good. What's on your mind tonight?
Not much. I've been listening to you for a while, and I've heard you say, as an owner-operator, that your percentage of profit should be about 40%.
The number that I really shoot for, and we have to clarify a few things first, just because there's a couple different ways people tend to measure this. There's two things I don't want to see listed as an expense when we're looking for this number. The first one is equipment payments. We need to say, if you have tractor or trailer payments, we need to get those out of the mix. The reason is it just confuses the issue too much. We certainly, it's an important number, but in order to get to a percentage that kind of works for everybody, we need to take that out, because you know, somebody could have paid off a truck last year and somebody else could have just started a truck payment this year. That would obviously skew the numbers, you know, all over the place. So take equipment payments out. The other thing that I never track as an expense for a single truck owner operator are driver's wages for you, the owner. And I know some people say, oh, but you got to pay yourself. And that's fine, but it's too random of a number. I mean, who decided how much you get paid? So for me, whatever is left over is your pay. So if we take those two things out of the mix, we list everything else, though. Fuel, maintenance, toll, scales, all that other stuff. I like to shoot for 50%. 40% is probably fairly average or so. I like to get that other 10% out of there.
Okay. Yeah, but the question was going to be, what do you shoot for when you have the extra truck with the driver on that truck? I mean, what should that truck be averaging, or how would you go about figuring to make sure that that truck is pulling what it's supposed to, you know, in profit?
Yep, good question. I'll give you my operation, and I'm pretty darn happy with mine. And you probably can't expect this in most operations, but it'll get you a starting point anyway.
Okay.
I've got three trucks with four drivers on them, so I'm not driving at all. I have a part-time driver that works. After all expenses, drivers are paid, taxes are paid, workers' comp, all that stuff, when my operation nets 25% or more, I'm pretty darn happy. And I do that most years. I mean, occasionally something will happen, and you know, the last year or two, it's been a struggle because I've been busy doing other things, so I'm not watching it as close. 25% makes me pretty darn happy. So certainly the closer you could get to that number, the better you'd be doing. If it dropped below 10, uh-huh, I would wonder why I was even bothering.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but I had been wondering about that because I usually, you know, average, you know, anywhere between, you know, 20 to 28%, just depends on how much fuel, you know, was left in the truck at the end of the week. So I was just wondering if my number was too high or too low, or...
Now, that's a truck with a driver on it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. If you're doing above 20, you're doing good. Those are good numbers. I've seen operations where, you know, that second truck is barely doing 10 when all is said and done. Now, there's nothing wrong with tracking by the week, but what we really want to look at is the bigger picture. What happens? I mean, in my operation, I don't even really look at a month very often anymore. I tend to look at a quarter, but mine's a little different because it doesn't change very much. You know, it doesn't hurt to look at that smaller time frame, but we want to make sure we're not missing the big picture, too. We want to look at the month, the quarter, and the year as well.
Okay, so just take an average for 3 months?
Well, track it over. You know, if you're using some sort of software program, this obviously becomes a lot easier. But we would want to track it for those longer periods of time, meaning we would create a profit loss statement for the month, and then we would create a profit loss statement for the quarter, and then, you know, 6 months, and then a year. Again, if you're using a software program, something like QuickBooks, it's pretty easy. You can choose any time frame you want.
I see. I had an idea I wanted to throw at you. See, if you, I don't know if you got some time.
Sure, go ahead.
Real quick, I try to check my charger cooler frequently, and I was thinking if there'd be a way where you can set up like some valves that are built in to the pipes itself with a PSI gauge, and then you could use the air pressure of your truck to air it up, so you can check it like in a matter of a couple of minutes while you're in a truck stop or something like that without having to take anything apart.
Yeah, I'm trying to think through why, you know, I'm not coming up with any obvious reason why that wouldn't work. As long as you could set it up to control the pressure, what we don't want to do is run 100 pounds of pressure into the system, but long as you could set it up with a valve and a gauge and you controlled the pressure, you could certainly use an air chuck, like a tire chuck, and then, you know, like you say, run it right off of a glad hand or the truck's air pressure, the same way we might set up to air up a tire. Yeah, I don't see why that wouldn't work.
The only thing I was thinking is whatever valves you would set up in the line, you'd have to be careful with restricting any of the air, right, the flow of the air.
Well, and the other thing I'm thinking is those valves, at some point they have to be able to shut off the air from flowing back the other way.
Yeah. Yeah, but there'd be like manual valves. When you want to check your charger cooler, you just go, you shut down the valves, and then you open the air supply and you air it up by hand, and then you just time it, see how much air is losing without having to take the whole system apart, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it certainly, I'd have to think through it a little bit to see exactly how and where I wanted to do it, but, you know, on the surface, it sounds like it could be done.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time and all you do for us owner-operators, man. You have a good night.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's see. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Greg, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question about that. I've never heard you talk about an air cell intake spacer. I want to see if you ever put one of those on your truck or... Is it $150 out the window?
You know, I haven't tested this yet. I keep saying that I'm going to, but and the reason you don't hear me talk about it is because I try not to talk too much about products that I don't really believe in. Here's the problem with it for me. There's so many things we're trying to test, and we only have so much time. If we're going to do a good test on something, we need 30 days prior to the change, 30 days after the change, and nothing can happen in between. Like, many times what will happen for me is we'll run 20-some days on a test, and then the truck that we're testing will have some sort of a breakdown. And if it's anything at all that could affect fuel economy, I'll start the test over. So, and when that happens a couple times, you could see how, you know, it takes me 60 days to test one product if nothing goes wrong. So there's only so much time we have for testing, so what I try to do is prioritize things in the order that they make sense to me. I've been working on fuel economy long enough to know when something has a chance of working or when something makes sense. Now, once in a while, I'll get surprised, either by something that I think should work and it doesn't, or something that I think shouldn't work and it does, but that doesn't happen very often. We know when it comes to fuel economy, the product or the method or whatever it is has to address four areas. It either has to address the thermal efficiency of the engine, which is what this product claims to do. So, and then the other three are aerodynamics, rolling resistance, and mechanical resistance in the driveline. If we don't change one of those four things, we really can't change or improve fuel economy. So now that we know what this product is supposed to do, it is supposed to affect the thermal efficiency of the engine, the idea being that it's going to take our intake air, swirl it, and somehow, because of that, create a better combustion in the chamber. Maybe it could work on a naturally aspirated engine. But when I start to look at it logically, on a turbocharged diesel engine, there's two problems. Well, maybe even more than two. One, we've already got a lot of boost pressure coming out of our turbo. And as long as our intake system, our turbocharger, and our charger cooler, and our intake manifold are in good shape, we've got lots of pressure. You know, 30, 40 pounds of boost already. Constant pressure on that intake. Two, after the place where that spacer goes, we have some twists and turns we have to get through before we even make it to the combustion chamber. So I'm not sure this threaded spacer in there can really affect our airflow in any significant way. And then three, when we've looked at people who do high-performance work on diesels, we know that if we port and jet hot coat the exhaust manifold, we see some improvements. But any time I've seen somebody work on the intake manifold or the intake part of the combustion chamber on a diesel, doesn't seem to work the way it does on a gas engine. We really don't see any improvements when we try to port the manifold or the intake, the inflow on the combustion chamber itself. So after looking at all of that, I thought, you know what, this thing just doesn't make any logical sense to me. So we kind of moved it farther down the list to test it. Doesn't mean that I won't. I would like to test it someday, but it's just not high on my priority list.
Okay. And recently you brought up a trailer that you're going to be talking about soon with aerodynamics or to get rid of the side skirts or have
right.
you gotten any more information on that yet?
Yeah, you know, I probably enough that I'm willing to at least talk about it so everybody knows what we're looking at. We haven't tested it yet. We're arranging for some of the first installations right now. But the reason I would be willing to talk about a product like this is because when I look at it logically, just the way I did with that product, this one makes a ton of sense to me. I mean, this one absolutely addresses one of the major issues, addresses it in a very new way, and in a way that makes a lot of sense. And they've got some heavy hitters behind this product as far as the company and who developed this. They've been in the news quite a bit lately because they just went to production about 3 weeks ago, so I know I've seen them in every truck publication I've picked up. I've heard them on the other shows. And we've been talking to them all along. It's a company called Smart Truck, and they brought in a lot of engineers from the aerospace industry, from motorsports. They've got some, like I say, some pretty heavy hitters at this company. Here's the concept. As soon as I saw this, I thought, wow, that just makes so much sense. And I've been reading about this idea for, I think it's been almost a year now, waiting for them to go into production. Right now, everybody is focused on side skirts. And I'm just not convinced that was the right way to go. And now that CARB has made them mandatory, we're seeing people just slap junk on the side of the trailer just to get by CARB's requirements. These things are flapping in the wind, they're warped, they're not designed well. I think some of these side skirts are going to hurt fuel economy. And they're going to cost us money because we're going to be banging them up. They're not going to last. I just don't think it's the right answer. We have many aerodynamic problems around a trailer, but let's talk about two of them. The first one that we're trying to address with side skirts is that if the air gets underneath the trailer, which it does, it is crashing into the tandems. The tandems themselves, that's where all the turbulence is being created. So we want to keep the wind off of the tandems, off of the front of the wheels. That's why they tried side skirts. It's the obvious choice. But side skirts actually hurt performance in strong side winds, crosswinds. That's a problem. I've mentioned the other problems, banging them up, that kind of thing. The other big problem that we're trying to address is the low pressure right behind the trailer. So we've used things like air tabs. We think that's a nice, simple, clean solution. Doesn't fix it completely, but it certainly helps it. Now they're working on big boat tails. Boat tails work really good, but they're not very practical. Again, they're kind of like side skirts. When you see these boat tails, there's some real problems with these things. We have to get out and, you know, unfasten them to get into a dock. We're going to be banging them up all the time. They're expensive. This company came up with an idea that's much more simple, much more durable, not very expensive really, and solves both problems, and it doesn't get in our way. The idea is when the air gets under the trailer, they're going to let it get under the trailer. They're putting, I don't want to call them fairings, but a device, a molded piece in front of the tandems that directs the airflow smoothly. Instead of crashing into the tandems, it directs the airflow smoothly between the tandems and down underneath the suspension, nice and smooth with fairings. So we get it past the tandems without crashing into those. Then here's the beauty of this. As soon as I read this, I thought, wow, these guys, they've got it figured out. Now that air that we just directed between the tandems and under the suspension is compressed, sped up, and shot out the back of the trailer and directed right up into that low pressure behind the trailer. So they fix both problems with a nice simple solution.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And it's not that expensive. I would have to go back to my notes because I've been doing so much this week. But I'm thinking, and there are a couple different configurations. You can add some pieces. They're doing something up on the top of the trailer with a rain gutter that directs the air down into the gap. But I'm thinking they were in like the $3,000 range for this setup.
I was just looking at side skirts for $1,600, and, you know, you put them on yourself, and I'm like, well, what if I don't do it right? I'd just be, you know, creating a problem instead of fixing one. So.
Yeah, and again, there are some real problems with side skirts. So they went into production about 3 weeks ago. You can buy these things now. They're on the market. So I would... My recommendation to anybody right now, the trailers, don't buy side skirts. And I'm not telling you to run out and buy this yet because I haven't tested it and we're still looking at some of their testing. But this makes so much sense to me. And they're showing some early results in the 10 and 11% improvement range.
You don't have a phone number, do you? I'll test it for you at that 10 or 11% range.
Yeah, actually, Lisa should have a phone number somewhere. If not, we'll look it up here and get it before the end of the podcast. So I think I've got Lisa looking it up right now, and I'll try to announce it before the end of the show.
Well, thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Lisa, are you listening? Yes. Can you find?
Ready?
Yep. Yes, I'm ready.
You have the number. It is 866-570-0447.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. That's Smart Truck. And again, I really like the testing I've seen from them so far. I really like the concept. And they look like a solid company that is, I'll tell you, after looking at the company, if they were going to do an IPO and go public, I might consider buying the stock. I'm that impressed with the company. Again, this is early, and, you know, I'd like to see more, but this is their first offering, and they've got some pretty heavy hitters when it comes to engineers. There's some guys there with 30-some years in aerospace and motorsports where aerodynamics have really been studied intensely. So I think we're going to see a lot more good things from them. And we're going, we've been talking to them, and it looks like we might do some pretty extensive work with them as well. And I'll keep you informed on how that goes. Let's go to... hey, you know what? We've got a lot of callers on the line, but we hardly have any questions at all. In fact, I think I've only got one more. So if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, if you have some ideas on what you'd like to see out of this podcast for the coming year, I mean, whatever, throw it out there. Press 1 on your phone right now because... the lines, as far as questions go, are pretty well wide open. I don't think we really have any more phone lines left, but if you're already on the call, it's wide open. Press 1 on your phone, Lisa, get to screening your call, and then I'll get to your question or whatever it may be. Let's go to Iowa. Ken, welcome to the program.
Kevin, good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you. I came up in trucking with the School of Hard Knocks, and through advice through relatives and whatever that had been truckers in the past, I was under the impression that the only way to shift a Class 8 truck was to float the gears, not use the clutch at all.
Okay.
And I'm going to be moving on to a typical trucking company here probably in the next month, and as I've been talking to other drivers, that's one of their requirements is the, you know, double clutch, and I've been practicing that, and it, you know, I think I got it down, but I was just kind of curious. There seems to be a bit of a debate as to whether floating gears is harmful to the transmission or if it's beneficial to, well, obviously it's beneficial to the clutch, but maybe at the
right.
The harm of the transmission.
Yeah, you're right, and I heard this debate over the years because I was brought up the same way, and I've been primarily floating the gears for years. I've actually always used a little bit of a mix. I mean, you can always kind of tell some trucks and some transmissions just don't float really well. Some, you know, when you're heavy and you've got a strain against the drivetrain, they're a little tougher, so I've always used a little bit of a mix. I will occasionally double clutch when I think it's going to be a little smoother, but I would say probably 90% of my shifts are without the clutch, and I've heard this same debate. I heard somebody told me one time that they could take a transmission apart and tell you whether or not you had been floating the gears based on the wear patterns, and it caused more wear. So I went to the source, transmission rebuilders, people that take apart dozens of transmissions a day, and they said, float the gears all you want. Floating the gears does not hurt the transmission. What hurts the transmission is lousy shifts. What hurts the transmission is, you know, too much torque at the wrong time, shifting at the wrong time, grinding the gears, whether you're using the clutch or not using the clutch. It's the bad shifts and the poorly timed shifts that will hurt the transmission. But if you're shifting at the right time and you're shifting smoothly, doesn't matter which one you do. And if we're not using the clutch, then that's that much less wear on the clutch.
Well, I appreciate that. I can't wait to plop down at the next truck stop and add to that debate.
Yeah. Now, don't think just because I said it, everybody's going to agree with you, but that's the information that I got from the source.
That's the trump card, though. You know, when you're not sure, you just say, well, that's what I heard from Kevin Rutherford, and it took quite some time. Kevin, have a really good night. Thank you again.
Yeah, you know, we can always, and I know this doesn't always work, but there's also, and this one just isn't, I don't even know if I should mention this one because it's not worth throwing into the argument, but you know, I've owned a lot of trucks over the last 20, I guess going on 25 years. And the one thing that I have hardly ever had to replace or do any work to has been transmissions. So we're, you know, and I usually keep my trucks to 1.5 million or darn close to it. All of my trucks, I very seldom ever get rid of anything before 1 million miles. And I've got a truck now at 1.5 million, and at 1.3 million. Those trucks have been, the gears have been floated on them forever. The transmissions are doing just great. I know we can't always use that argument, but it does work sometimes. Let's go to Rick in South Carolina. Welcome to the program.
Mr. Rutherford, good night, sir.
Hey there. What's up tonight?
Nothing much, man. Still messing around with this exhaust on this thing. Hey, my fuel mileage. Oh, real quick, Kevin. Personally, I don't matter whether you talk politics or mechanics or whatever, as long as you're on, I mean, even if I don't agree with everything you say, you make me think. So either way you decide to go, as long as I can listen to the show, that's what's important to me.
Got it. I appreciate that. Thank you.
On my fuel mileage went back up. I had a bad thermostat on this truck. And I replaced my thermostat, and my last tank I ran yesterday came out to be 7.91.
Wow.
And the tank prior to that one was 7.51. Prior to that one was 6.72. So I think this exhaust might be working out. Because I had the bad thermostat, I'm going to run it for another 2 weeks or so and get a solid number. Then I'm going to get that muffler that Bruce said he had that fit right next to the transmission.
Okay.
And see what it does from there.
Okay. Yeah, you know, this is the tough part about fuel economy sometimes, is that we make a change and we're looking for, you know, an improvement or whatever it is, and something goes haywire. I've got another case like this I'm working on a Fleet air filter. You know, we've got hundreds of Fleet air filters installs, and the fuel mileage goes up. I mean, it's just logical. It works. And we had one, and somebody claimed they lost a mile per gallon. And it's making me crazy trying to figure out what else could be going on, because we know it's not the filter. We even double-checked. I mean, we went, I spent today, and I had Bruce check in for me, and we made sure that there wasn't some sort of a mass airflow sensor that would detect the higher airflow and then adjust the fuel flow to match it. If that were happening, that would be a problem. And I didn't think that there was, but we went back and checked with a lot of people just to make sure. So there isn't, not on that engine or any engine that I can find. So that's not the issue. So, you know, sometimes this just happens. It's coincidence. We make a change. Something else happens at the same time. Sometimes it takes us a while to work out the number. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with yours.
Hey, could you help me figure out, I mean, I'm pretty good now at, you know, tracking my fuel mileage as far as per tank. I'm also on fuel gauges, but I'm trying to get down like you guys do, a 30-day average and quarterly average and stuff. On my first fuel up, is it correct that I don't count the fuel on the first fuel up, I just count the miles? And then I start counting the fuel after the first fuel up?
Yes. The first fuel up is only to establish the starting mileage.
Okay, and then go ahead, I'm sorry.
I want to make sure that I explain this right, because it can be confusing. It's easier if I can show you on paper. But if we were to pick today, today is the day we're going to start running an average. We would write down our mileage today. And we don't, if we're going to do a 30-day average, we could write down the mileage today, whatever fuel receipt you get today, put it as your starting, you know, however you want to identify it. And then 30 days from now, we would top off again and write down that mileage. And that first receipt actually would count the fuel that we put in.
Oh, so you would count the fuel on the first receipt?
Let me make sure I'm going through this right again. No, you would not, because that's our top-off point on that first one, is the top-off. You would count the last one. Because the last one is what it takes us to get back to full.
Okay, so on the mileage, you count the first and last mileage, but on the fuel, you don't count the first one, but you count the last one.
Count the last one, right. That's the way you would do it, trying to get a long-term average. Now, And we're dealing with programmers, so I'm not going to say dates or when, but we're close to fuel gauges, the next version of fuel gauges, when we release it, you will be able to go in and choose any period you want and get your averages. So you would be able to go in, and you won't have to change what you're doing. You'll still continue just to put in your receipts the way you've always put them in, but you could go in and say, okay, give me the last 90 days. Give me from, April 1st to now. Give me this year, whatever. You'll be able to pick a time frame and get your running averages.
Okay, that'll be great. You think that'll be out before the end of the year?
I hope so. We're really close. And really what's holding it up is that we're also getting pretty close to our full-blown accounting program, which will just be called Gauges. We'll have fuel gauges and gauges. They'll work together. You won't have to have both, but it'll be an option. And that will be full-blown accounting for everything, profit and loss statements, the whole shot. And we're working on them together. I mean, if we were to focus just on fuel gauges, we could probably release that next version in about 2 weeks. But we're in order to save some time and money, we're working on them together. And we'll release them pretty close to each other. The next version of fuel gauges will come out, and then within a couple weeks after that, we'll probably release the full-blown accounting program.
With that accounting program, I currently use ATBS and I'm incorporated, so I use them for myself and my business. Is that something where if I was to get that, I wouldn't be needing their services anymore? Would that be able to pretty much cover everything?
Sort of. And what we're working on with them is the real beauty behind our program. Some people just like to do their own, and they don't really feel like they have the tools or the right program. Some people don't want to do their own. They don't want to be caught up in handling all the receipts, doing the data entry. We're trying to find the best of both worlds. The beauty of ours is going to be the reporting, the fact that you can get to it online, that kind of thing. And this is not a done deal by any means. But we are working on possibly tying our system into ATBS, and there would be two options. One, continue to send your receipts to them and let them do all the data entry, but you would be able to go into the system and pull up all of our reporting and the other tools that we're building into it. Or two, you do your own data entry. You can still obviously see all the reporting and see all the tools. And at the end of the year, your data is there for the tax preparer to do your tax return. And you could also maybe have them look over your stuff throughout the year because the two systems would be tied together. That's what we're working on, but again, it's by no means a done deal yet.
Okay. I'd be very interested in that once you get it going.
The other ideas, and we'll throw them out there just so people know what we're working on. We are also talking to companies like ProMiles that do fuel tax and fuel optimization to possibly tie into their system and make it work with ours. And we're also looking at possibly tying into load boards. And the idea there would be, did you attend the webinar? I think you did, where I showed how to calculate the profitability of a load.
Yes, sir.
Remember the first two steps to that was you had to know your own fixed cost and your own variable cost per mile.
Yes,
sir. The idea would be that if you're using our accounting program, we know those numbers. The fixed cost per mile is already figured. The variable cost per mile is already in there. It would work in conjunction with one of those load boards so that you would select 3 or 4 or 5 loads or whatever you wanted, and it would calculate the profitability for you.
Oh, that sounds like a one-stop shopping right there, Kevin. Like, that's all you need. You get everything from that one program.
That's what we're working on. That's the future of it. Who knows when we'll get there, but we're trying to build it with all of those things in mind.
Okay, I'd definitely be interested in that because I want to learn everything, every aspect as far as the truck, the behind the scenes. So, yeah, you know, I don't mind getting my hands dirty.
Good, good. So we'll keep you informed on how that's going.
I really appreciate it, sir.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Denver this time. Jack, welcome to the program.
Kevin, can you hear me?
I can. You sound great. Go ahead.
All right. Hey, I was just going to, I just want to say thanks for everything you do. I really appreciate you. And that accounting software online, that sounds great. I'm excited about that.
We're pretty excited about it. I actually started this project, back in 2006, I think. And I wrote all the software. I wrote a lot of it myself, and it was a disk-based. You had to download it or buy it. And, you know, I always wanted it to be online. I just didn't have the ability to do all that programming. So it's exciting to know that we're getting close. It kind of makes me crazy, though. I should understand this by now. No matter what question you ask the programmers, anytime you ask them how long something's going to take, the answer is always 2 weeks, no matter what. And the project could be 2 years, and somehow the answer is always 2 weeks. So I've learned now that I don't put out dates anymore. I'll just say we're close and we're working on it.
I spent some time in college doing programming, and, yeah, they're about all the same. They think they, yeah. Do it in a couple weeks, and sometimes it takes a year.
Yeah.
My question tonight, I was going to ask you about recondition versus rebuild. On, I'll just tell you what I got. I got an N14 03 Volvo. It's an old Averitt truck, you know. And I just turned 1,000,000 miles on it, and it's still running good. I put about 1 gallon in every 5,000 miles or so, just depending on how hard it's running and stuff like that. So,
okay.
But down the road, I'm just wondering, what's the difference between a reconditioned versus a you doing your own rebuild? Is it about the same or no?
No, and the problem is we can't even really compare the two because the name that we use, there's no standardized version of that. I mean, there, you know, we call it an in-frame, but there's a lot of different variations on an in-frame. Or we call it a reconditioned. That may be closer to being standardized, but still that isn't, you know, there are different levels and variations of that. When you take, when we build glider kits, when you take what we do with that engine, that may be the pretty darn close to about the highest level you could get because everything on the inside of the engine is new, with some exceptions. Cranks are virtually never replaced. Cams, again, usually not. So there are some components that are almost never replaced, but internally, the way we do them here, cylinder kits, all that stuff is all redone. And then externally, everything is brand new. I mean, literally anything that gets bolted onto the block here is going to be new. Starters, alternators, air conditioning pumps, wiring harnesses, everything is going to be new. Now, that's different than a recondition. A recondition, some of those things may or may not be new. And with an in-frame, now you're really all over the board. I mean, some people will do the very cheapest in-frame possible, which is just tear it down and put cylinder kits in it and don't replace anything else.
Gotcha.
Other times, you may do a much more in-depth in-frame while you've got it apart. You'll do the turbo and, you know, add some of the external parts. So we really, in order to know what we're getting, we have to almost go line by line. Whether we're calling it a reconditioned, a crate motor, an in-frame, an out-of-frame, we really have to look at each one line by line and saying what parts are they replacing, what parts are they reconditioning, and, you know, what's the cost.
So like a reconditioned motor, do they give you a list of what's been done on it? Or is because like
yes.
a Cummins reconditioned,
yes.
Gotcha, okay.
And that's
not...
what you want. Yeah, that's what you want to ask for. Anytime you're going to try to compare these things, if you're looking at a company and they say they're going to supply you with a reconditioned engine, that's what you're buying, you want to know everything on that engine that's been changed, rebuilt, reconditioned. You know, sometimes with heads, many times with heads, you'll get an in-frame or a reconditioned. They may not replace the injector cups. They may do a pressure test. And if it passes the pressure test, they leave it alone. Well, the problem with that is that injector cup could be a month away from blowing a hole through it. Well, it holds pressure right now, but it may not hold pressure in 30 days. It's almost worn through. So if I'm going to take the time to put a head on, I'd like new injector cups.
Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. And then the other thing with the difference between the reconditioned and the one you have to rebuild the one you have is I know what kind of mileage I get and how this motor runs. With the reconditioned, you might not know that then.
That's correct. And there's something to be said for that. If I like the engine I've got, if it's been one of those really solid engines, I may just keep it. Now, there's nothing to say that we can't make an engine better when we rebuild it, and there's nothing to say we couldn't screw one up when we rebuild it. But if I know what I have, I mean, really for me, let's take budget out of the picture for a second. The ultimate engine, and we did this on the signature truck, and it can get pretty darn expensive, was the way we did that signature engine. We tore it down piece by piece. The crank, even though you don't replace it, it was Magnaflux, straightened, inspected, everything that you could do to the crank to make sure it was as good as new was done. The block itself was line bored, meaning we literally, every block is going to warp over time, and then we line bore the block so that even though the block itself is warped, the crank is going to sit in the block perfectly straight. We balanced all the connecting rods and the pistons, which nobody ever does. You know, every piece throughout the engine, we did everything we could to make that piece as good as it could possibly be. That would be your ultimate engine. I mean, we kind of built that the way you would build a race engine, and they do that on a race engine so it can handle all that stress and horsepower and torque and all those other things. We did it not looking for all that horsepower. We did it so that you've got a really smooth, well-balanced, easy turning, you know, all of those things. But again, you know, budget is what it really comes down to. You can easily spend $30,000 or $35,000 to do an engine that way.
Yeah, but when you did that one, that signature truck is getting, isn't it getting close to 8.5, 9?
Yeah.
I think it's right at 9.
And it's the smoothest engine you've ever seen. I mean, when you build one that like that, it's just amazing how smooth a big diesel engine can run. You can't even see that thing move. And the engine is going to last a very long time because it's running so free, it's working so well. So it's one of those things. If your budget allows for it, if you have that kind of money and you can afford it, you almost can't go wrong. I mean, you'll never regret spending that kind of money as long as you have it.
How long will that motor last then once that's done?
You know, most of the time, if we look at an in-frame, let's just stay a standard in-frame, even though I said there's really no such thing, but cylinder kits, maybe turbo, that kind of stuff. We expect to get maybe 600,000 out of an in-frame. 1 million out of the original motor is what I shoot for. 600,000 out of the in-frame. I would easily say we get another 1 million out of doing a good out-of-frame like that. It gets us back to at least as good as new and in some ways better.
Okay. Okay. Well, I just gotta. Then I gotta decide if this truck's gonna make it 2 million miles, right?
That's the other thing is yeah, you know, we can make this engine last 1 million, but what are we going to do to make sure the rest of the truck that we're putting it in makes it that far? Let's see. Let's try to squeeze in another call or so. Let's go to Dave in Pennsylvania. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin.
Hey there.
I was wondering about if you could explain a little more about the single overdrive, double overdrive. I know it's talked about a lot on the show.
Well, that's okay. There's still a lot of people that don't get it, and it's always good to explain this kind of stuff. When we talk about overdrive, what we're really talking about is the gear ratio in the different gears of the transmission. And the way we show a ratio is something to something, like 1-to-1 is a ratio. Direct drive, when we talk about a direct drive transmission or a direct drive gear, means it's 1-to-1. And what that really means is there is no gearing happening. I mean, if we're in direct drive, 1-to-1, it would be the same as pulling the transmission out of there and running a drive shaft from the back of the engine to the rear end. There is no gearing happening that's direct. Anything beyond direct, we refer to as an overdrive. Anything before direct, we would actually refer to as an underdrive. We usually just don't use that term. So once we get past direct drive, we start talking about ratios like 0.85, 0.74, 0.86, 0.73 there. So when we talk about a double overdrive, which is really the most common overdrive transmission today, whether it's a 13 or an 18 speed, it's more than likely going to be a double overdrive. So let's say a 13 speed double overdrive. 11th gear is direct. 1-to-1 is the ratio. 12th gear is probably going to be 0.85. That's our first overdrive. 13th gear is going to be our second overdrive, and the ratio is probably going to be 0.74. Now, if we, I borrowed Bruce's truck, one that he built. He has a single overdrive 18 speed, so 17th gear is direct, and 18th gear is 0.85. That would be a single overdrive. There is no 0.73. There is no second overdrive in that transmission.
Okay. Makes sense.
Now, the other thing to know about overdrive, the deeper we go, when we talk about deeper, 0.73 is deeper than 0.86. Our second overdrive is deeper. The deeper we go into that overdrive gearing, the less efficient they become. The more mechanical loss that we have, the farther we go into overdrive. That's why we'd like to stay in direct when we can. If we are going to go into overdrive, I'd like to go just to a single overdrive because it's more efficient than a double. And then when we get into some of the other weird transmissions out there, there are some transmissions that go all the way down to 0.67 for an overdrive. And some of those lose as much as 20% efficiency.
Wow.
Yeah.
The more you lose, right?
Yep. The deeper you go, the more you lose. The thing that has confused people over the years is that overdrive lowers our RPM, so people think it's improving things. Well, there's a cost for that. So what we would rather do is lower our RPM indirect by having a different rear-end ratio. We don't pay for it when it's back there. We're going to pay for it if we try to lower RPM in the transmission. So what we'd like to do is stick to direct, use a different gear in the rear end if we need to, and it's always a balancing act. We have to balance that between startability, which is a whole other topic that we'll have to save for another show because we're all out of time for tonight. Thanks for joining me. And again, tonight's show is sponsored by True Balance. And if you want to give True Balance a call, their phone number, 970-686-9285. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you in 30 minutes on the live show on Sirius XM. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.